Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. This is Deborah Cloyd. I'm the debut novelist. My book, The Summer We Came to Life, it just came out with Mira Book Harlequin in June. And I'm very lucky to be speaking with Percival Everett. Hi, Percival. Are you there?
I am here. How are you?
I'm fine. So, quick introduction. Percival Everett, in 22 years, he has written 19 books. He teaches creative writing, American Studies, and Critical Theory at USC. He's been awarded so many awards, it's hard for me to list them all, but PEN USA 2006 Literary Award, the Academy Award for Literature of the American Academy of Arts and Letters, the Hearst Wright Legacy Award, the PEN Oakland Josephine Miles Award for Excellence in Literature, and he's been a judge for the National Book Award and for the PEN Faulkner Award Fiction in 1991, which makes me very nervous and honored to be speaking with you. So thank you for taking the time to answer some questions.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Okay. So I have a couple questions, and we'll see how much we have time for. I know you're going to get going in a little bit, but I wanted to know, so you write short stories, you write poetry, novels, children's books. It's very impressive. Do you think that writing ability necessarily makes you equally good at these different forms?
Well, I've written one children's book, and that was kind of an accident, so I don't have any talent for that. I write poetry to prove that I'm not a poet, and and I think I've done a pretty good job of that. Stories are distractions for me, more or less. I like novels. I think novelistically, I like to read novels. And every now and then a story happens, and that's a great joy for me. But I haven't written a story in 6 years, 7 years.
Oh. Yeah, I can't write short stories. Ironically, I lose interest. Like, you would think it would be easier to write short stories. I find them so much harder. I guess I need, like, the daunting commitment of a novel to make myself sit down every day. Okay, well, where do your ideas... I guess I should disclose that I've met Percival before, and I'll explain the circumstances in a little bit, but I am curious, where do your ideas for novels come from?
Oh, it's magic. I have no idea. I suppose sometimes I'll read something or hear someone say something, but that's seldom the case for me. It's usually just some strange occurrence. I had one novel that was a rest stop, and it was the exit right before my ranch. It was for Theodore Street, and as I was pulling off one day, I read that, and that became the name of my character.
Like a little bits and pieces. But you read a lot. Does anything ever come from, like, newspaper stories or articles or...
I always hope that something will. I had a novel that, obviously, my novel Wounded derives initially from an interest in the Matthew Shepard tragedy in Wyoming, but I wouldn't say that was even the novel was not about that. It was a jumping off place, but I wish I could pull on stuff like that more often.
Yeah, I was really curious to see how you answer that, because that's a question that I'm such a new to this whole thing, and that's a question that I've been getting a lot. Like, how do you come up with the ideas? And then you have to think about it. Well, let's see.
Well,
the
answer is that you're insane.
That what?
Yeah. Our answer has to be that we're insane.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I mean, I think novel writing inherently is kind of crazy, and you have all these little, like, bits and pieces from, I mean, and some people will spot them, some people, you know, will say, oh, that's me, and, well, not really, it's like a mix of all these different experiences. I don't know, I think it's the most fascinating process, so, yeah, I'm looking forward to writing more novels, but I do think it's a strange undertaking. Okay, so there's no magic to it. It's just I just keep going with and no company, hopefully. Okay, so I was thinking about creativity, and did you see that talk, Elizabeth Gilbert? She gave a TED talk on creativity that a lot of people were talking about. Do you know which one I mean?
No, I don't know anything about it.
Okay, so she's the Eat, Pray, Love lady, so she's, you know, very mainstream, but she does, she's kind of an interesting speaker, certainly engaging. And what I thought was made me think of you is because you're so, like, you've written a lot, reforming Greek and Roman myths and stuff. You seem to have an interest in that. And she kind of talked about creativity in that time, like, in how it has evolved throughout time and in those times, that they didn't consider it the responsibility of the artist. They really thought, they didn't think that it came from the artist. They thought that you were tapping into, you know, like the muse kind of, or they call them demons. But do you have a theory on creativity? Like, do you, it's kind of a similar.
Well, you know, Euripides and Aristophanes and Aeschylus put their names on their plays.
Right. True.
You know, they didn't sign it the muse. No,
sir.
No. No,
you know, for fancy dinner table talk.
Yeah, I mean, I make this shit up. I mean, that's my job. I wish there were a muse that gave me some work. Sometimes I do it better than another time. Sometimes it comes more easily, but it doesn't happen unless I do the work.
Right.
If that's creativity, I guess it is, but it's the same creativity I would employ if I were building an interesting house.
Right. Okay, so then you're not the writer that sits down and puts on, like, a certain hat and listens to a certain music and recites a certain, you know, poem or something every day. Do you have any, like, rituals about it then, or is it, no, it's just, it's work. It's sitting down and getting to it.
Yeah, I have no rituals. I have no schedule. Many writers do. Everybody works differently. I work when I can. From 12 years of training horses, I learned that the only thing I can do is sit down when I have a chance and work. Because I had to mend fences, work with the animals. And so I had 15 minutes here, 20 minutes there, and I had to take advantage of it.
See, I've heard that before, but how do you, I mean, this is just my own personal curiosity, because how do you, like, in 15 minutes, what can you accomplish? I don't think I could write. I mean, you write a couple of sentences here and there, like on your laptop, or do you write by hand? Or
I write by hand. You know, it's, everybody's different. Everybody works differently. I'm very lucky in that I can start working immediately when I sit down. I know where I am. I just start working, and then I stop and I come back to it. And I realize I'm fortunate to be able to do that. A lot of writers, you mentioned rituals, have to have their desk a certain way, and I understand that. And maybe it's a better way to work. I don't know, but I work this other way.
Well, obviously it's working. You're a very, very prolific writer, so. Okay, well, I'm going to skip ahead then, because that makes me think, see, I'm right now in the middle of, you know, book two. I had this, it was a two-book deal, which is amazing, and I'm very grateful, but I think we talked about this before, that now I have a second novel due in, like, 2 months, and I'm kind of overwhelmed. So I'm kind of revising, right? I've got most of the first draft, and I'm really revising. So how much revising do you do then? It sounds almost like it comes out of you fully formed.
Oh, no, I do a lot of revising.
Yep.
Yeah, I do several drafts of everything.
Okay, so you basically lay a first draft down all the way through, and then you do go back and.
Well, I don't really consider.
Do you?
I don't consider it a first draft until I've written it all the way through and then gone through it once. Then I have a first draft.
Interesting. Because a lot of things change, or because, like, do you find yourself rewriting the beginning and?
Well, in the beginning, you don't know what you're doing. You don't know what you're doing until you get to the middle. And then you write it. Then you go back and you have to rewrite the beginning because now you know what it's about. It changes the middle and the end changes. So then I have a first draft.
Okay, that's awesome to hear you say, only because that's what I tried telling my editor.
I had to turn in like the first 50 pages, and she says, okay, well, let's rewrite this. And I'm like, well, it would be silly to rewrite this now because I need to write the rest of it, and then I guarantee you this is going to change. So, yeah, this is an editor.
Yeah.
Interesting.
New experience. Okay, so let's see. All right, so let's tell them how we met. So I, by the way, my connection, like, it's very hard for me to hear you. Is yours,
is
can
it?
You hear the same voice that I hear? Like a...
I can hear you fairly well. It's a little muffled, but it's pretty clear.
Okay. Modern technology. Good. Okay. So I met you when I was applying for the USC Creative Writing and PhD in Literature program. And it was so nice to meet everyone, you know, down there, you and Amy and CT, and you were so helpful. So thank you again for that. I know I've said it before, but thank you for kindness. I think I told you that the way it played out, I didn't get into the program, but then it was like, and I was so bummed because it was so much work, and then it's a week later is when I got the contract. I got a two-book deal. And now I think, okay, do I want to go back to school? I really want to know what you think, you're the expert, what the value of an MFA is for a writer. I mean, do you think it's necessary for growth, or is it more the community aspect, the degree?
Well, it depends on the writer, certainly. I don't know if it's necessary for all writers. A lot of my students are all very talented. They like the community. It's a period of time that's uninterrupted where you get to work on nothing but your writing. And that's hard to find in your adult life. So in that way, and you get the advice of people who do this for a living, and that's certainly helpful. I've always had mixed feelings about more and more programs. I don't know if the world needs any more programs than we have. I'm not sure that programs have done a lot to advance American letters. It's created a lot of writing that's very similar. I call them the workshop stories. But then those writers grow up and write pretty interesting work. So maybe short term, I'm not terribly happy with it. The long term, maybe I am.
Right. Well, and of course, it allows you to be a professor, to be a teacher, and you love teaching, right? You found that very rewarding and a good compliment to your writing.
Oh, it's great. I mean, I think more than anything, my students make my work better. I get paid to hang around with smart young people. It's hard to complain about that.
That was my attraction.
I
love school.
And it's thrilling for me, and I doubt seriously if I would be as, you know, I guess I'm prolific. If I would have written as much as I have, if I hadn't been in that environment.
Right. I know. I'm doing such a juggling act right now because I'm still teaching, doing photography and sales, but in the end, I think you do end up probably doing more when you have more on your plate. And certainly I can see how teaching would be a good compliment. But do you, like, okay, so I'll say that I run a privacy school for little kids, and we talked about this because you have kids about almost that age. And so I teach them composition, and I teach adults also. I teach them all these color and theories about perspective and, you know, that kind of stuff. But I still always kind of suspect that I can't teach someone to see, you know, like I can't teach someone to be a good photographer in a sense. I can't teach them to have that eye. And I always kind of wonder about that, about writing. Like, if you can teach someone to write, you know, I don't, what do you think?
Well, you know, I teach my students to be true to their vision of what they want their work to be. I don't want anyone to try to write the way I do. What would be more boring than that? But They're but I do try to teach them to look at their work in not only critical ways, but in adventurous ways.
Right.
To look for other ways to tell stories and to push the envelope, to push beyond the borders of the page.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, I still want to go back to school. Well, I mean, writing can be kind of, I don't know if lonely is the right word, but certainly I love working with them.
The right word.
Is it? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it is. I do feel like it would be, I would like good input. And, you know, you can try writers groups and you can try family input and stuff, but no, I think you're right. I don't know that you can teach someone to write, but I do think you can probably teach them to be the best writer that they can be. So, something to think about. Okay, so, first of all, what were you like as a child?
I honestly don't remember. Read all the time. I got moved from the outfield to third base because I got caught with a paper bag in my glove.
Were you studious? Were you an athlete?
I like sports, but I don't know if I played tennis all the time. I played, you know, the usual football and baseball. I remember the books of my childhood better than most things.
I have about 1,100 books in my house spread out in different bookcases. I've moved them all over the place, and you're right. Like, when people ask, why in the world do I keep all of them? It's because if you look through them, they're highlighted and outlined and dog-eared, and I have written the most ridiculous things that you write when you're 15 and think you know everything about the world. So they are. They're like my scrapbook or something, you know? It's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was definitely a similar kind of child, but a lot. All right, and where do you see yourself in 10 years from now? Do you still want to be, like, you are happy with how it is now? Are you going to start writing screenplays? Are you going to, any surprises, move to Montana?
I don't know. I just want to take care of my boys and make sure they're happy. I'm lucky. I get to do travel a lot,
exactly.
and I don't teach very much, so I'm free to make what I want, and I'm curious to see what my work will be like in 10 years. I have no idea. I hope that it's really different. I hope that it's really strange. We'll see.
It's really strange, like your books, all your quirky characters and.
I don't know. I just hope that it's really different. I hope that I don't recognize it.
I like that answer. Okay, me too. But my life changes every 6 months, so that's probably a definite that it's going to be different. Okay, but so, hey, speaking of my life now, so I think I told you I lived with my boyfriend, and he is also a writer. And we've been living together now, I guess, about a year, but your wife is a novelist, and I wondered if you have any advice for writer relationships.
We get along really well. We're very different. Our work habits are different. My wife gives me stuff to read all the time, and I never give her anything. We're just different people. I'm very solitary with my work, and she has a writer's group, and they get along really well, and I think it's helpful to her, and it's something I can never imagine doing. And she gives me work, and I give it back to her, and I don't say anything, because I'm married, I'm not stupid.
But she's not looking for critique, she just is like, hey, this is what I'm working on, kind of thing?
She is looking for critiques, but if it's great, it's great, but you don't ask people you live with, you don't ask family for advice on your work. That's my feeling.
I always say in interviews, I say my mom was my first editor because she was a school teacher for 30-whatever years, so she's just ruthless. She's just like wordy. She crosses out entire paragraphs. I'm like, oh. But she, I mean, you know, sometimes she's not right, but she is pretty good at yeah.
That's good.
Send it to my mom.
Maybe I'll send her my next book.
Okay, but be ready, because it's fair words. Okay, so I did want to ask you one thing, and you say you're a private writer, you're a solitary writer. One of the things I had no idea about is what is expected of an author nowadays in terms of, like, social media and publicity. Like, I didn't realize that I was going to have Facebook and Twitter and a website and a blog, and I think I've always just said I wanted to, you know, write alone in my pajamas. I mean, that's why you become a writer, because you appreciate the alone time, you know. And so I was looking, and it doesn't seem like you really do too much of that. So what, you know, I checked out your Facebook fan page. It has 628 fans.
I've heard that exists. I've never seen that.
Oh, you didn't do that.
I don't, I don't do any of this. I'm not even sure what Twitter is. No, I have no interest in self-promotion at all.
Yeah, I remember, you really don't do book tours, like the author tours, or you'll do limited interviews, which makes me incredibly nervous when you talk to me, but...
I'll do a reading occasionally, and I'll do invited. You know, if people invite me to read, I will go. But I don't typically like tours, and I certainly don't like, what do they call them? Websites and blogs and stuff. You know, I feel like like I'm from the 19th century sometimes.
Well, I think I'm there with you. I'm doing it. Well, I mean, I do like to interact. Like, it's kind of a beautiful thing. I've had people write in and say, your book has touched me, you know, complete strangers in the middle of America that have written me. I mean, that's pretty incredible, because the whole time I was writing, yeah, my first book, maybe I just about so aware yet, but it's hard to think of people writing in. Like, I'm just used to the idea of writing something for me, you know, and it is neat to be in touch with people, but yeah, I find it very overwhelming. I find the internet, I find the onslaught of information in general very overwhelming. So I'll let you know how it goes with Twitter, basically. Yeah, I find it too much. Okay, so tell me why you love to paint.
I love paintings. I think I paint because it's such a... so different from my relationship with that art is so different from my relationship with writing. I don't know if it's correct to say, but I'll say that my relationship, writing language just necessarily is you know, the most intellectual art form. We're talking about our mode of communication, symbols that are abstract, without form, that mean something in the world. And with the painting, the relationship is, for me, more emotional, more immediate. Though I can spend a lot of time with the painting, generally, the relationship is much shorter. And I just love the physical aspect of the paint. I love the way it feels, smells. I love the powder of it before it mixes with the oils. And I love getting physically tired doing it. So it's instead of just sitting like a lump at my notebook.
Ah, that's interesting. I'm very hands-on for, like, this. Probably why I like photography, and I always love to be in the dark room, and I love the chemicals, and I love the, like, any kind of very physical process.
But do you think then that painting is it rawer? Is it more of a raw? I'm trying to look the way to phrase that. I mean, because writing is much more an intellectual process. Like you are using your help me out. what's a better way to phrase it?
It's a raw, rawer thing. Yes, I mean, it's certainly, finally, the any discussion of the work is, one is going to be as intellectual as a discussion of the other, because that's all discussion. But the making of it is what I love. Well, it's the making of the novel. Once I'm finished with the novel, I have little use for it. And I love the idea of letting, but the book's always there, you know, and then it becomes a question of, well, the story is there, does it exist in that book or outside the book? The painting is there. It is this physical object. I know where it is. If I sell it, then it's gone. And I hope I never see it again. But in a way, I hope that one day I'll run across this piece of work, and I wonder if I'll recognize it. So it's, you know, it's just another way of being engaged with the world.
And is writing that, like you say, you put a book down and then you're done with it. So you've written all of these books. Do you, like, can you remember the first one, or is it, you know, do you think you can talk about it still?
Is there a chance?
Hello. I'm going to hang up. Can you hear me?
Yes. And I said
okay.
That was Skype.
That was Skype, yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Whew, still has a lot of noise, but okay, I can hear you.
Okay.
Yeah, well,
it's a clearer connection.
It is, okay. So good. Yeah, I mean, basically, I think we were just talking about painting and relating it to novels and saying, looking back on all these books that you've written, do you remember them? Like, could you talk to me about the first book that you wrote? Can you remember characters and that kind of stuff? Or is it still vivid for you? Or no, it's the first book.
I suppose I remember them rather vaguely. But it's certainly the case that I can open up any of them, and you could probably start reading to me from one of those books and I wouldn't recognize it. But more importantly, I really don't much care about them anymore. It's I've turned them loose. The exciting thing about writing is, once you turn the work loose, you can't control what it means.
It's not yours.
And I'm not sure.
Yeah,
I'm not sure I would even do it if I could. The exciting thing is learning what other people see. It's got its own life once it leaves me, and that's kind of wonderful.
Yeah. I mean, this whole thing has been obviously such a life-changing experience. My first book coming out, but talking about it, like, I just, you know, you just, there's so many things you don't think about, and I actually had to get one extension for book two because I had no idea what a full-time job it was going to be with the book coming out and doing interviews and blog posts and stuff. I just wasn't prepared for how much I was going to be talking about writing rather than
Friday. So
yes.
Maybe that's where, you know, a degree would help you. I'm so behind sometimes in talking about structure and talking about other writers and comparisons. But yeah, I find it a very interesting process to try and talk about the writing itself, especially because a reader is coming to it with their own interpretations and their own, you know, and that's theirs. So it's interesting to try and address their impressions of it with my intention. You know, it's a strange conversation. Okay, well, let's talk about one of your books in particular. Your book Erasure deals, well, with a lot of things, but it deals with the publishing industry's use or misuse of genre and categorization. And so that's another thing that I've been asked in, like, every interview is about genre. So mine is a women's fiction book, depending on who you talk to. It's supernatural or it's sci-fi, triplet. I mean, romance, you name it, it's been called it. So it's been this kind of interesting discussion that I didn't know a lot about, so I've been researching it more, and it's just an interesting dialogue, you know, it's such a commentary on our society, and so I know that this is something that you kind of dealt with a lot when Erasure came out, I guess it was back in 2002, but what are your thoughts now? You still see the same? Can you talk about, you know, your views on genre and categorization?
When I think about that book, for me, it's more about things that that make it difficult to make art in a culture. One of those things being the expectations of the powers in control of disseminating that art. So you have publishers who, like bookstores, they want to create these categories and marginalize certain artists. And obviously that's a problem for not only those of us who get marginalized, but it should be for anyone who makes art at all.
Right. And yeah, we kind of had this discussion before, just saying, you know, when people say, well, what is women's fiction? It's the same thing as kind of like African American literature, you know, these sections that you find in a bookstore, but you don't see, you know, men's fiction or white men's fiction, or it's a very kind of tricky subject to navigate, you know. And so then, and I guess you're so much more the expert on like social theory and, you know, like you're saying, like a marginalized voice. But do you see a change any time, or do you think attitudes have changed, or?
I think attitudes have changed. The problem perhaps has become a little more insidious because while many people recognize the problem, they still behave as if all of this is okay. And we have the same biases and the same. We're enculturated the same way. And so we have the same expectations.
Right.
But now it never really upset me as much as it just kind of morosely amuses me. The culture is, you know, I don't know if I can say this in the right way, really fairly fucked. And it's just the way it is.
Yeah, I think it is the way it is. I do think the more, you know, things that run outside of genre and stereotypes and succeed will hopefully make a dent. I don't know. I mean, I'm not overstating my part in it, but, you know, I've answered the question so many times, like, and fought for quantum physics to be in the book and in a girl's book, and I find that so insulting, you know. Just even the surprise at it is insulting. So, I mean, I hope that as more and more examples just pile up, you know, that it will change. But you're right. I mean, we are such a product of media and television, and the stereotypes just keep getting regurgitated.
And it's hard to say whether the media is a reflection of the culture idea. So I don't have answers to this. I'm really just a kind of a clumsy cowboy. I just recognize it and move on.
Right. Well, I mean, so your wife is, let's see, is she Japanese, Irish, Mexican, right? She's a whole mix of stuff, and my boyfriend is...
As far as I know, there's no Japanese in that. Just,
no? Oh. doing research, but she comes from a very mixed background, and I come from I come from a Mexican and Indian and Irish, and my boyfriend is... So basically where I'm going with this, he's Cherokee Indian and Chinese and a whole bunch of other stuff. So eventually we'll all just kind of blend more and we'll have these different experiences and all these different things that we can relate to. And I kind of think that hopefully that too, and as women, you know, kind of it's all pretty new still that we're kind of holding our own. So, you know, I don't know. I think I'm hopeful.
Yeah.
I think things will change.
Yeah, it's nice to be hopeful and then you turn on the television and hear about Tea Partiers. And there goes hope.
Yeah. I watch Bill Maher. I watch a lot of like daily news. I know. It is. It can be disheartening. Okay. Well, if you want to finish up, I'd like to ask you just for me. So looking back now, I mean, you've got all of these books, and I just can't. It's just such an accomplishment. And I'm so respectful of that. Do you have any advice? What's your advice? Looking back on everything that you've learned and teaching and writing all these books, what would you advise me as a first-time novice?
Marry money.
Nice. Yeah.
Right. Which I did not do, so I know that it's...
We're living a good life.
I think the thing is, take yourself seriously. No one else will if you don't.
That's very good advice. All right, Percival. Do you have any questions for me? Anything you want to tell us about what you're working on now or anything at all?
No.
Thing?
I'm no good at talking about what I'm working on. But good luck with your deadline.
Thanks. Yeah, October 1st, right around the corner. All right, well, I hope to speak to you soon, and thank you so much for doing this. And that was great. Your answers were really, really inspiring. So thank you.
Good. Thanks for having me.
Take care.
Good night.
Good night.
Is a tornado in farmer. You know that I'm a snowman, I go blam. I keep Take the man that says that I'm a stumble, start stumble down the lane. At least we don't burn down.